crop, I think. That's like a main temple practice. Maharaj was there? Kesha, I know, yeah, well, yeah, it's like Lord Brahma. Keshavarti. Yeah. He didn't go into Vrindavan, huh?
No.
Yeah. Acha. Oh. I should have gone there. We listened to a lecture of Prabhupada. In that Nectar Devotion where he talks about see all ladies as gopis. Hey Govinda Radha Radha Vandeham Shigaro Sriyuta Padakamalam Shigarun Vaishnavamscha Shirupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Vrijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Paran Sahagana Lalita Shiv Shakanvitam Shtam Panchakalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vaivacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadha Shivasri Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hey, can you get the clock from the altar? It's a little clock. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is further elaborating on this bhajana kriya, and he concludes his discussion with two verses, or rather three verses, 39, 40, and 44. Thank you. And 39 is working with detachment. This is the title. This is from Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, verse 11 to 32. Vritya sabhava kritaya vartamana sakarma krit hitva svabhavajam karma shaner nirgunatam yat. One who maintains his occupational duty, swadharma, by taking shelter. We did it yesterday. Yeah, excuse me. Thank you. Text 40. Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto. Chapter 7, verse 39. I don't think we did that. Just control your eating. Did we do that? I don't think we did. This is, of course, this section of the Bhagavatam is the teachings of the Avadhut Brahman. And the Avadhut Brahman is actually an incarnation or Shaktivesh avatar of the Bhagavan, Sri Krishna. His name is Dattatreya. Sometimes he's referred to as Bhagavan Dattatreya. All different avatars are called Bhagavan Dattatreya, Bhagavan Parasaram. But they may be in different categories in terms of whether they're full representations of the Lord or Avesh avatars. But the Avadhut Brahman, he had 26 or 28 gurus, and he learned something from them. So this he learned from the guru named Air, like this, so much wind or air is blowing. Panavrityeva santushyan munir naivendriya priye jnanam yata nanasheta navakir yeta vanmana. Bhagavan Dattatreya said, I have taken a lesson from the way in which the vital force within the body operates. That's the prana. This is the lesson, that one should eat and drink only as much as is required to sustain the body. A sadhaka should also eat only what is needed to maintain his life. A sadhaka should not enjoy sense objects merely for his own gratification. Otherwise his intelligence will become corrupted his mind restless, and his speech engaged in topics unrelated to Krishna. Yes. In America, we used to have an expression back in the 70s, you are what you eat. Love animals, don't eat them. There's some groups like this. You are what you eat, love animals, don't eat them. So these were, of course, pro-vegetarian movements. You are what you eat. I think it was maybe the title of a poem by Carl Sandburg or something. He was a 18th century poet in America who happened to become vegetarian. So we are what we eat. Whatever we eat, that will determine our thinking. And then our thinking will determine our willing, and our willing will determine our action. A similar idea is being spoken here by the Avadhut Brahman. A sadhaka should not enjoy sense objects merely for his own sense gratification. In other words, we eat to live, we don't live to eat. Simple living, high thinking. So simple living, high thinking. In other words, if simple living means we eat very simple foodstuffs, and if we eat very simple foodstuffs simply just to maintain the body. There are so many wonderful foodstuffs in the name of, quote, prasadam. So in the beginning of Krishna consciousness, a devotee is advised, please only eat Krishna prasadam. Once we had a formula like that, like Bhakti Siddhanta's three lifetimes, we were saying it takes a devotee about 10 years to come to the point of only eating Krishna prasadam. And then it takes another 10 years of eating a regulated amount of Krishna prasadam. And then the last 10 years, he'll eat a regulated amount of the most simple and basic Krishna prasadam. So after 30 years of taking Krishna prasadam, he'll finally come to the point of vachovegam, controlling his tongue. This is my own formula, like Bhakti Siddhanta's three lifetimes. Because practically, you see, it takes... Because we say, yes, I'm only eating Krishna prasadam, but then we drink a thumbs up, and we take a lassi, and this and that. And so many things that really aren't offered to Krishna, or aren't even offerable to Krishna. And then the real meaning of Krishna prasadam is that which he likes. So it may take 10 years to come to the point of accepting the fact that, yes, I should offer Krishna a variety of tasty and wonderful foods, which he likes, and then take his remnants. That's the first level. That takes 10 years. And if he doesn't like pizza, that means it's going to take me 10 years to give up transcendental spiritual pizza, which is vegetarian, but there's nowhere in Shastra where it says Krishna eats pizza. So when we're in the level of dovetailing our sense gratification with Krishna consciousness, then we say, well, it's vegetarian, Prabhu. What's wrong with it? We have all the defensive ideas. Prabhu, what's wrong with it? It's vegetarian. It's only tomatoes, it's that. What's wrong with it is that Krishna doesn't like it. Krishna doesn't eat it. We don't read any descriptions. So that's why I say it's not so easy. It sounds easy. It takes 10 years to only eat Krishna prasadam. Then 10 years to eat it a regulated amount of all the wonderful things that Krishna eats, or hundreds of preparations. And then final 10 years, this is what this verse is talking about. That we live very simply. I mean, compared to other yoga practitioners of other yoga paths, because yoga, this is certainly a path of yoga, and as Krishna says, it's the topmost. Yoginam api sarvesham. He says, of all the yogis, the bhakti yogis, top, in the 6th chapter of Gita, 47th verse. But other yogis, they really eat austere. They're very bland food, very tasteless food, deliberately to keep the mind peaceful and the senses under control. So, in some cases, no spices, some cases, no salt. So, and never, ever a sweet. We may do some intense vrata for 1 month where we don't eat a sweet or something. Krishna prasad. So, comparatively to other yoga paths, even our most simple diet that we may outline for ourselves is rather elaborate. A sadhaka should not enjoy sense objects merely for his own sense gratification. Otherwise, his intelligence will become corrupted, his mind restless, and his speech engaged in topics unrelated to Krishna. So it's like the descending order. First it's ascending. We put the food in the body, then the food gets digested, and then the food ascends. The food goes up from the body and goes to the topmost point. The topmost point is the intelligence. And then the from the intelligence of food comes back down to the mind of senses. So when we eat luxurious, tasty food, that luxurious, tasty food has qualities of passion. It's like suji, ghee, and sugar are sattvic. But if you combine them in a certain way and make halava, halava by nature is rajasic. It has rajasic qualities. You offer it to Krishna, it becomes transcendental. If any animal takes that halava prasad, or any human being, they'll get human birth. And nevertheless, when you put that halava prasad in your body, it will have a rajasic effect by agitating the mind. So the transcendental quality is there, no doubt. But also the material quality, because it's both. It's not made of chit. The prasadam is not chit. It's spiritualized by the contact of Krishna, but still it's made of material elements, born and created of this world. People say, Prabhu, it's halva, it's transcendental. Give me five more bowls. You take five more bowls and see what happens to your mind and senses. You can't even hold your hand out straight without shaking. Take a few bowls of halva and wait 3 hours till it's digested and hold your hand out. It'll go like this. Not when you're 90 years old either. When you're 90, that happens automatically. When you're 20, because this is one of the senses. This is called Gyanendriya, Karmendriya, working senses. The hand is one of the senses. So it says the senses will become, the mind will become restless. So if you have your hand, you won't even be able to hold it straight. But if you take milk, if you drink milk for 1 month, milk is sattvic by nature, by gun, and you offer to Krishna, it's transcendental milk. And you take that for 1 month, once a day, and you can hold your hand, you can fix your concentration for hours on end, when your mind won't waver, and you can hold your hand out like some mannequin or some, what do they call it, mime, like some perfect mime. You could stand in one position for hours. Because we had the experience in the West, sometimes we couldn't come for Kartik. And so we had to spend Kartik Brat in the West, so we took a vow only taking milk once a day. Half liter, 1 liter, depending if I was in cold place. And I notice this, how much you become, after about 2 weeks, you become so like, so cool. I mean, so really, really like, you know, fixed. And you know, the mind is not, your mind and senses, your will, your desire, your attention, your concentration, everything is can be on. You want it here, it's here. You want it on Japa, it's on Japa. You want it on seeing Thakurji, there's no, it won't go anywhere. It's like all points on it. Point of an arrow. It's also nice if you can do sometime, you can try 4 months with no salt, which we've done a couple chaturmasyas, because salt is extremely rajasic, and the more people like to salt their food, the more they increase the rajagun in their body. So in the absence of salt, the same food we have, then we have all the sattvic things in front of us. Then we add lots of salt, and then it starts to take on rajasic nature. Like you have rice or something. Just plain rice. And it doesn't have any taste. And put a lot of salt in it. And rice is just completely sattvic. Plain white rice, boiled. And then you put so the sadhaka, he's always trying to, anukulya in his sankalpa, he's trying to accept everything which is favorable for Krishna samadhi. Because that's the goal. Our goal is Radha Krishna Samadhi, to be in Samadhi, to be one-pointed, to be fixed on Radha and Krishna. So we want to accept all those people, places, actions, thoughts, foods, clothing, everything which will fix our mind at one point. It's all-encompassing, the principle of Anukulyasi Sankalpa. It's all-encompassing. Every aspect of our interaction, of the Atma's interaction with the elements of this body and with this world is related to this point. So it's a non-ending pursuit of perfection on all these different levels. This is the practice of sadhana. So the more we're careful and conscientious in all these departments, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, speaking, eating. This is yogi. We have to become yogi. But mostly our nature is to be bogi. Who want to be bogies? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is trying to bring us back to the path with the reins. The horse may veer from the path, and the driver has to pull on the reins. Whoa, come back. Pull the pull more in the left one. If his horse is going off, veering to the right, and going off the path, then the horse rider, horseman, will pull more on the left side, the bridle, and he'll pull in his mouth, and go like this. And the horse will say, oh, I'm supposed to go to the left. And go like this. And go, okay, now. And go straight. So these verses are like reins, or they're pulling on us. The horses of our senses and desire being pulled back to the path of pure bhakti. Nice verse. So this is, in other words, eating is a big feature of our lives. So we have to control our eating. And this is a long, rather long verse. This is the symptoms of aikantiki bhakti. Aikantiki means eka, eka antiki. One means end, like antilila. Eka means one end. Aikantiki. One is one end, and one end. There's only one end, one idea, one object. So bhakti, which has only one object and its intention. This text 44. Chant the holy name with exclusive commitment. Endeavors made in performing resolute bhajan are described in Hari Bhakti Vilas. At the very end of Hari Bhakti Vilas, Gopal Pata Goswami has summarized the activities of a renunciate who has completely dedicated himself to a life of worship. Well, that would certainly, we would all certainly like to meet that definition of renunciate, a vairagi, or a sannyasi. Because that applies to all of us. This is at the end of the book. These verses are spoken at the end of Hari Bhakti Vilas, which is an extremely large book. It's now being printed and sold in Vrindavan. The first volume came out. I think it's the first five Vilasas is published in one volume. I think it'll be four volumes altogether, verse and translation. So these are the activities of a renunciate. What is a renunciate? He is someone who has committed, completely dedicated himself to a life of worship. We didn't say performing austerity, standing on the head, eating one chickpea a day. It said a life of worship. So worship means bhajan, nam bhajan. Shravanam kirtanam vishnu smaranam. And there's several verses which Bhaktivinoda includes as his last entry here on describing the second yama, nam namakari, second dvitiya yama sadhana, nam namakari bahudanija sarva shaktis. Evame kantinam praya kirtanam smaranam prabhu kurvatam parama pritya krityamanyan tarochite. Pavena kena chit preshta shri murtir angrise vane syadi chaisham samantrena swarasena eva tadviti ehitesh veva nityeshu pravartante swayam hite sarvatyage yahe yaya savanarta bhuvashchaye kurya pratishta vishtaya yat tam yatnam asparshane varam prabhate chardarate cha madhyane divase shaye kirtyanti harim yeve natesham anyasaranam. Translation. If a one-pointed devotee, aikantika bhakta, chants and contemplates the glories of his Prabhu, Sri Vishnu, with great affection, and according to his transcendental sentiments, he will have no taste for any other activity. So we chant and meditate on Krishna's pastimes with great affection according to the particular sentiment of love that's dormant in our heart, then we'll lose all taste for anything else. With whatever mood he desires to serve the lotus feet of his beloved deity, he performs archan through his particular mantra and his particular mellow of devotion. That same service later transforms into his eternal service. So Aikantiki Bhakti, and Aikantiki Bhakta basically is describing to be at this level, because these verses, especially in the end of each chapter, usually the verses are referring to the Jatarati Sadaka. So practically this is a person who is at the beginning level of bhava, that has such fixation and such revelation of his sthayibhava, according to his he's saying with affection, worshipping the Lord according to the transcendental sentiments in the heart. That's a very high level of development. You can say asakti, or beginning of bhava. That same service that he's rendering later transforms into his eternal service. Even if one has given up everything else, the desire for personal prestige is the hardest thing to give up. In other words, we may give up everything, but the desire for personal prestige or recognition or honor, and that has to be given up before this can happen, become Aikantiki Bhakta. What is that has to be given up? It's the desire for name and fame, which is pratishtha. This is the root cause or the source of all anarthas. The prime duty is to give up this pratishtha. The prime duty is to give up this pratishtha, which is compared to stool. What to speak of touching this pratishtha? Do not see it, even from a distance. What to speak of touching this pratishtha? For one who chants the name of Sri Hari in the morning, noon, evening, and midnight, no other sadhana is needed. So, if you're doing that, and obviously you're on a pretty high level of devotion, because it's basically it's saying you're chanting Hare Krishna 24 hours a day, Kirtaniya Sadhari. So at least you're on the level of Nishtha, according to Lord Chaitanya, Kirtaniya Sadhari. But with these other types of moods that are describing, it must be on the level of asakti for these revelations to come. For one who chants the name of Sri Hari in the morning, noon, evening, and midnight, no other sadhana is needed. So that covers the Astakali Leela. If you're there, it says. So this is what goes on the level of Bhava Bhakti. The Jatarati Sadaka, he does this. He chants morning, noon, evening, and midnight. Generally, we see that the very advanced and senior devotees who are absorbed in Nambhajan, they make sure that they're awake during all the eight kalas of the day, eight time periods, at least for some time, so they can immerse their hearts and their meditation through the practice of Nambhajan into those different leelas, and touch those leelas with their minds and heart, and think of them briefly or for an extended period. And then after that, then they may take some rest. So they usually orient their eating or sleeping around these leelas, so they don't miss any one of these leelas. So the evening leela, Nisha leela, begins at 10:48 in the evening and goes until 3:36 a.m. So the very serious and advanced devotees, they won't take rest before 11 in the night. I mean, many fact, they do take rest at 11. So from 10:36 until 11, for 24 minutes, they dip into the ocean of Nisha Leela and meditate on different pastimes, then chant Nam Bhajan, maybe render service there, then maybe take rest at 11. And then they'll get up oftentimes before, usually at 3, and there's still some of the pastime, Nisha Leela, is going on, 10:36 to 3:36. And then they start to prepare, and of course they're up for Nishant Leela, Pratak Leela, like this. And there's no question of, and then they're up in the afternoon throughout. So they touch each of the eight Leelas, they're up, but generally we miss all of Nisha Leela. Because in Nisha Leela we're in Yoga Nidra, or some kind of Nidra. We take rest at 9, some devotees, but it's nice, some devotees, they take rest at 8 and they get up at 2 or 1, That's very nice if they can do like that. But then they miss Pradosh Lila 836 to 1048, and then they miss some of the Nishant Lila, Anisha Lila. It's very interesting when you meet different sadhakas and they ask you when you take rest, when you get up, and then you don't know exactly what their line of questioning is in the beginning. And then they say, oh, but then they point out to you some flaws. So, but you're missing this lila, or you're missing that lila. I said, listen, I'm missing all the lilas. For what the only lila I'm absorbed in is Maya. But it certainly broadens your viewpoint of things, and also at the same time increases your appreciation for your own Gurudev, or your Param Guru, whatever the case may be. When you think of Srila Prabhupada, because he usually didn't take rest before 11, and he got up at 1 to enter the Bhagavat Leela of Radha and Krishna, and to comment on that Leela, render service to that Leela, and distribute that Leela to other conditioned souls. So certainly that's an ideal example. And then Prabhupada, as we have the 5-hour period at night, Nisha Leela, then exactly the same time in the day we have also the same 5-hour period, which is called Madhyan Leela, in the middle of the night and the middle of the day are the longest pastimes of Radha and Krishna. The middle of the night is spent with rasa dancing, and the middle of the day is spent at Radhakund. So it's like really a nice, so in the same time period, 10:36 in the morning until 3:36 in the afternoon is Madhyan Leela. So Prabhupada, he was definitely up during that time, and he would take prasad at 1, which is about the same time that Radha and Krishna are also taking some fruits, bhojan or something like that. There's a term for it. Taking forest fruits, and then the forest around Radhakund. And Prabhupada would step for a little while till 2. Then he would take 1 hour rest till about 3. Sometimes 4 if he's really tired. Till 4. So then he would get up again, and then it would be Aparan Leela, 3:36 to 6. So in Prabhupada's own life, he was up during all the different eight kalas, rendering service to, as in his external and internal body, spiritual body. So we have a very grand example in the life of Srila Prabhupada. Superlative example, because if you compare it to the modern day sadhus, very few of the even most elevated ones will take rest at 11, get up at 1. Many do. But most take rest at 11, get up at 3 or 3:30. It's something to strive for. If we don't hear about high things or serious bhajan, then we think everything is wonderful. We think we're doing quite wonderful, and what we're doing is we have it honed down to perfection. We have our quote unquote program, and we're quite satisfied with it, and it seems to work, and we're healthy with it, and our body has accepted it, and our mind is accepting it, and we think that's enough, and I've gone far enough, and I mean, gee whiz. Look at me before I joined. I was sleeping 10 hours a day. Now I'm only sleeping 6. So what a big improvement. I'm a great hero, a great heroine. So I shouldn't become any more of a hero or heroine. It's called complacency, right? Because most of us, I don't think before we joined ISKCON, too many of us were getting up at 3:30 in the morning. Maybe we're going to bed at 3:30. What is night for all men is a time of awakening for the self-controlled. Krishna knows all about our ways. He's talked about our ways 5,000 years ago. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he's described this verse in Bengali. Ekanta bhaktera matra kirtana smaran anya parve ruchinai haya pravartan. Exclusive devotion means to only engage in kirtan and smaran. So this is ekanta bhaktera. mantra, kirtan smaran. Exclusive devotion only I have all these abbreviations. I don't even know what they mean. Exclusive devotees only engage in kirtan and smaran, ekanta bhakta. An ekanta who has one end in mind, only one end, the loving service of Radha and Krishna. Exclusive devotees only engage in kirtan and smaran. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur has given us so many lila kirtans, means kirtans which are meant for smaran. So he's given us so many that we sing every night, and we're supposed to enter a deep mood of smaran. The sun is going down, the sky is slightly red, stars are not yet appearing, then it's time for Kiva Jayo Jayo Gora Chandi Aroti Kasoga. Different melodies for that. Prabhupada sang, maybe, I know he sang one, that slow one, maybe the other one. So this is kirtan smaran. We're doing kirtan with many devotees. A kirti, we're glorifying the fame and qualities of Gauranga and his associates. This is kirti, kirtan. With musical instruments, and we're singing exactly at the time of day this lila takes place in Nityanamadvip. And we're to meditate deeply. This is, Prabhupada introduced the concept of lila. What? Hey, what is this lila kirtan? What are you talking about, lila kirtan? Prabhupada never said this. Hey, come on, you know, this is deviation from ISKCON. Yeah. Really? Interesting. Back in day one, Prabhupada was introducing lila kirtan. Right? And then in 7:30 in the morning, 7:30 in the morning, Prabhupada was saying, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. So, what's this describing? This is describing that it's magmas. And because the Brijvasis and Boma Vrindavan, they're all following the mood and mellows of Nara Leela, human-like pastimes. So Radharani has told her relatives, oh listen, it's magmas. In all the Padma Puran, Skanda Puran, it says the activity, the most auspicious activity to do in this month in order to attain the mercy of the Lord and to attain piety and sukriti and welfare for my husband and benefits for myself and family is to take bath, it's prataksnan, to take bath in the holy Jamuna River. So, oh Mother Jatila, with your permission, may I go to the Yamuna and take bath in the month of Magh. So Radharani goes with all her sakis. And then, meanwhile, Krishna is telling Mother Yashoda, oh, Mother Yashoda, it's Magmas. And I want to go with Subal and Sridham and Madhumangal. Madhumangal is telling me, he's reading the Puranas, and this is Magmas. And every human being who wants to have fortune in life and benefit in next life, they should all take bath in Yamuna during the Pratak time. Sun, it means like sunrise. 6 o'clock and so. 6 day 24. So please let me go. Yes, Lala, you please go. And you take some tiffin with you, because it'll be very cold, you'll be hungry, you take a thermos with some, you know, spiced tea, you know, like our Sachinandan always has his thermos, you know, when he goes on Prickham in the winter. Very smart man. So, you know, Mother Yashoda sends a thermos with some nice spice, you know, Gokul. They have Gokul tea, right? So where does it come from? So Gokul tea must come from Krishna. Gokul Chandra. So she sends some Gokul Chandra spiced tea with him, and then he takes some tiffin over there, some jalebis and kachoris and a typical Brijbasi nasta, Brijbasi breakfast. So then he goes there, and Radharani goes there, and then they bathe, and then now they finish bathing and they're dressed and they're in a very happy mood to be with each other, and there's not much time. So then there's so many beautiful kunjas on the bank of the Yamuna near Keshi Ghat and Imlitala and all this area here, Javatri Kunj, and many, many beautiful kunjas there. So then Krishna, he's feeling a romantic mood, because practically it's saying, Kaishor Safala Rasa Kridam, it says, Kaishor Safalam Kridam Radhake Sat. There's one verse where Rupa Goswami is saying that the fruit, the Kaishor Safalam, the complete fruit, the fruit of Krishna's Kaishor age, was simply to enjoy loving pastimes with Radharani. So Krishna made his teenage life fruitful by engaging in kriya, in intimate loving exchanges with Radharani at any time, any place, any opportune moment. So here it's morning time, 7:30, Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. So Krishna's in the kunjas at this time, and he's enjoying with Radharani on the banks of the Yamuna. And we're singing about it in the temples. And this is called Lila Kirtan. But most of us maybe are even not even awake. So Prabhupada introduced this. This Lila is happening at this time. We're singing this. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Right. And then we sing a prayer. Vaja Bhakata Vatsala Sri Gaurahari Sri Gaurahari Sohi Goshta Vihari Nandir Nideshi Vaise Girivaradhari. So we sing this song. Generally, following the pattern of some Gaudiya Mass, we sing this song in a noontime with the Rajbhog. Because it's about bhog, and it's nice, it's a lot of, and that's when temples usually offer their most luxurious bhog to Thakurji at noon. So this prayer describes luxurious bhog, cooked by Radharani, Rohini, Nanda, Yashoda, and so many sakis. But actually, this is Lila Kirtan by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And we sing it. It's part and parcel of ISKCON. It's in our songbook. But, again, this is Pratak Lila. This is 6 o'clock. So first we sing the Krishna's early morning, just to be at the end of, you know, this 6 o'clock, right in the beginning of this Pratak Lila is this Yamuna Lila, Jaya Radha Kunja Vihari. Then later, when Krishna goes back to Nandagaon, then he has his breakfast. And that's like just at the end at 8:30, 8:20, like this. And then he's eating all these wonderful preparations, because that prayer by Bhaktivinoda Thakur is describing the pastime at Dandagaon when the boys sit down in rows and they're served food by Yashoda and Rohini, and Radharani's looking on from the corners of her eyes, and she's cooked so many Radhikara Paka Anna Vivida Vyanjan. She's cooked so much Paka Anna, she's cooked wonderful grains and wonderful Vyanjan vegetables and so many things for Krishna. So this is not noontime, because noontime there's no Yashoda. Noontime is Radhakund. Noontime there's no Yashoda, no Rohini, and no cowherd boys. So this is called Lila Kirtan. So Bhaktivinoda, in ISKCON we have at least three standard kirtans that are in our songbook, and there's so many others, Vibha Rishesha and so many others. That's in Vrindavan at least. We have Lila Kirtan. It's very much part and parcel of ISKCON. So we're supposed to do Kirtan and Smaran. So if we do that, very quickly we become Ekanta. Ekanta Bhaktera Mantra Kirtan Smaran. Bhavera Sahita Haya Sri Krishna Sevan Swarasiki Bhavakrame Haya Udipan. They, Ekanta Bhaktas, serve Krishna with Bhav. That's why I was saying that this verse is talking about the Bhav. They serve Krishna with Bhav. This leads to spontaneous remembrance of Krishna's pastimes. Bhavera Sahita means with Bhav. Haya, they do Sri Krishna Sevan. So they're serving Krishna with a great Bhav. And Swarasiki Bhav Krame Haya Udipan. So at the level of Bhav, then one is at the higher, developed level of Bhava. Then one's meditation takes the shape of Swarasiki. It's like a flow of the Ganges. It keeps moving and moving and moving, one pastime to another. And that river, as the river is carrying various particles in it to the ocean, so when one enters the river of Swarasiki meditation, it carries the soul and carries your devotion to the ocean of Prem Ras at the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. But before this, even the beginning level of Bhav and all the way down through other stages of devotion, Asakti, Ruchi, Nishta, more like Ruchi begins. We can try before that. Mantra Upasana, one does Mantra Upasana, meditates in a conscious way, in a step-by-step way. Ekanta Bhaktera Kriya, Ekanta Bhaktera Kriya, Muja Ragotita, Tadapise Sabanai Viri Viparita. Ekantika Bhaktas, activities and moods are all born out of their love for Krishna. Even so, they never act against the rules and regulations of the scriptures. Viri Viparita. Viparita means upside down. Or, like, upside down. Kriya Muja Ragodita. So they they're on a very high level of bhajan and devotion, but nevertheless, they exhibit proper decorum and behavior to preserve the integrity of the Vaishnava Raja Sabha, for the most part. There are exceptions, Avadhuts and others. For most devotees, even they're very advanced, you can't understand. Everything is rather hidden. It's not that they have to make some display or some outward show to indicate where they are or what they are or what they've attained. It's quite a few more verses. This is the Sarvatyaga Kari Leo Charas Sukaitin Pratishtasa Tyage Jatna Paibe Pravin.
Even though one may renounce all external things, it's very difficult to give up the desire for personal glory. However, one should make a concerted effort to do so. Sarvatyaga Kari Leo Charas Sukaitin
It's very difficult to give up pratishtha in its various forms, as we were mentioning the other day. We want pratishtha by any way we can get it, by dressing, by speaking, by acting, by anything. It's so pernicious and pervading within the consciousness of the jiva. The desire for pratishtha. We don't even recognize it. We don't even see it, that it's all over our face, so to speak. Like some child, he plays all day in the mud, and he gets so much mud on his face, then it dries out, and he's so much absorbed in playing, he doesn't really remember that 3 hours before he fell in the mud, and it's all over his face, and he's not carrying a mirror or anything. Then he goes home and sees his mother, and she says, "Look at you, you're covered, you're just covered with mud." "It's not, I'm not," because they always deny any accusations. Whenever a child is accused of anything, then they will deny it. So, I don't have any mud on my face. So the same way, someone points out that we're suffering from a heavy dose of pratishtha, then we'll say, "No, I don't have that. I don't have any. I'm free from that." There's once a story, a very big, maybe I told the story already. This one we were in Haridwar in 1981, and doing some preaching. I mean, we're staying in Rishikesh, Lakshman Chulan Road, but we're going to Haridwar for life membership. And there's one big Akar, Mahant, Acharya, Guru, whatever. He had a function, speaking function. And his disciples, they made some flyers to announce his function. And then, and they said, so-and-so will speak at such-and-such a place and such-and-such a time on Rama Kaivalya or whatever, you know, some interesting topic, some Mayavadi topic. And his name was like, or his title, his official title was quite a lengthy one. You know, Ekazar, not Ashtutarsh, it was all in Hindi, Ashtutarsh, whatever it wasn't. Ekazar, you know, 1008, no, Sri Shrimad, Shastra Shiromani, Mahamandaleshwar, Jagadguru, this, that, the other, you know, everything you could possibly be, he was. And a really long title. And then the disciple, he had the Ekazarat, and one of those little adjectives he forgot, Mahamandaleshwar, means that mandal means like circle. Mandal sometimes also means this planet, or it means this great planet. And Ishwar means he's the controller, Mahamandaleshwar. He's the great controller of this mandal, this circle. Mandal means circle. This circle of this planet. He's like a Digvijay, Mahamandaleshwar. It's quite an exalted topic, title. So then, and we were there, and a disciple bought in the flyers. And so he said, "You distribute the flyers?" "Yes, all over Haridwar and Rishikesh, we put here and there." He said, "Very good. Let me see, what do you did?" His picture was there. "You fool!" I can still remember. He got so angry, his beard was like trembling. And he'd say, "You fool, what have you done?" And the disciples like cowering and shivering and turning white. And then it was all in Hindi, so I got a little bit of it. Then my friend Christian Balan was telling me that the disciple forgot one of the key words of his title. And so the guru was so angry. He said, "Now you go and take all those posters down and you redo it," and, you know, like this. I was like, Pratishtha. He's very sense controlled, a yogi, brahmachari, sannyasi, guru, and no hanky panky, or, you know, very clear, you know, proper behavior. But still, this—it's like a cancer. It's within us, and we don't even know it till it's diagnosed. We think everything's fine. We have some pain in our chest, and then we go and they say, "Oh, you have breast cancer." Oh, thanks a lot. Thanks for the good news. You know, it's there already. It's been there for a long time. Until to make pain, to give pain, means it's quite progressive. So Pratishtha is part of our bloodstream. It travels with us birth after birth. So until we meet Bhakti Vinod and enlightened guardians on the path of devotion, then we don't even understand. We have this cancerous growth within our consciousness. Sarvatya, did I read that? Prabhate gabhira ratre madhyanai sandhyaya anartha charyalao namara ashraya. Erase all wickedness from the heart. From your heart. Then later, then one should chant the holy name morning, day, and deep into the night. Right. Ratre Madhyan Sandhyaya. Anartha Charya Lao Namer Ashraya. Throw away all anarthas and take shelter of the holy name. Prabhate Gabhira, I guess that means erase all wickedness. Then 3. E Rupe Kirtana Smarana Ye Kare Krishna Kripa Haya Shigra Anaya Se Tare. One should chant the holy name and remember Krishna's pastimes. If one does this, he will quickly cross over the material nature by the mercy of Krishna. So some people say, well, we should just chant Hare Krishna and hear the holy name. That's a fact. Shravanam Kirtanam. They go together. So if someone says, you should chant the holy name and chant Hare Krishna Mahamantra and hear the holy name. That's correct. It's called Shravanam Kirtanam. But that person obviously doesn't know that there's one practice after that. There's Shravanam, Kirtanam, then Smaranam. So is it exactly correct if someone says, you should just chant the holy name and hear the holy name? He's correct. And we say, yes, sir, you're right. And someone else comes along, you should chant the holy name, hear the holy name, and remember pastimes. So he's not going against what the other teacher told you, because this discussion came up a few weeks ago. What if someone says, and we say, yes, you're correct. And now what if someone says, you should chant the holy name, and hear the holy name, remember pastimes, and fully surrender, Atmanavedita. So now you're told 4 things to do. Right? So this is what you'll see. That acharya will tell you, one acharya may say, do one thing, and another acharya will say, oh, you're doing that one thing? Oh, now add 2. Okay, now do 2 things. Now do 3 things. Now do 9 things, 9 limbs of devotion. Now Atmanavedanam, surrender everything. Because the whole idea is to come to this platform, everything. Body, mind, and words, all surrender to Krishna. So the means to that end is Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam. 1, 2, 3. Ek, do, teen. Right? So, it's correct, but it's not to the topmost correct. So you might say, well, Prabhupada said just, of course, he also said, remember Krishna's pastimes. So Prabhupada said, just chant the holy name and hear the holy name. So that's all right. When you start, we should do that. But after one's been around for some time, then if you went to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, I followed your first 2 instructions in regards to the holy name. I've been chanting the holy name for 2 years now. Will you give me any further instructions on the holy name? Or is this the end? No, now you should chant the holy name, and you should hear the holy name, and you should remember Krishna's pastimes. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, or Krishna Smaranam. Acha, thank you, Srila Prabhupada. Then you spend time on that, and then, because that's the complete package. This package of perfection has three steps to perfection. Hear, chant, and remember. So the teacher will say, okay, you're ready for the first two steps, so just take one step, and then two. Okay, now you're ready for third step, now take three. But 40 years later, you're only on the first two steps. Then what is this? Because also Prabhupada's telling, as he's telling, just hear the holy name. Just chant and hear, tat Srinu. But then somewhere else he's writing and telling to a disciple, you should chant Hare Krishna, and you should, when you're chanting Hare Krishna, you must remember Krishna's pastimes while chanting. Now what is this? This means nothing? This doesn't mean anything? Prabhupada is only throwing words in the sky? Oh, that's only for that devotee, not me. Maybe, at that time. But we also want to be like that devotee. We also want to be qualified or become qualified enough so that that instruction also applies to us and we accept it as our own individual instruction and take it up as our own and practice it accordingly by hearing, chanting, and remembering Krishna's pastimes. And then when we take a peek at the instructions or teachings of other acharyas in our line of devotion, Gaudiya Sampradaya, they're all telling, remember Krishna's past, chant and remember, chant and remember. Oh, Bhaktivinoda's telling, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's telling, everyone's telling, then maybe I should do. So here again we're reminded.
That was number two. Mm-hmm. I said it once a chat.
Shadakari Saru Sange Krishanamalai Anartha Sakalajai Nishta Upajai. Take shelter of Krishna's name
in the association of devotees with faith. By this, all anarthas will disappear and will attain steadiness in chanting. Nishta upajaya. Anartha sakala jaya. Nishta upajaya. Shradhakari sauru sange krishna namalai. Anartha sakala jaya. Nishta upajaya. Kartakkale nityalila karibe chintan. Chintite chintite bhave haive sadhan. Now remember Radha and Krishna's pastimes in the morning. By doing so over and over, you will attain bhav. Pratakkale nitya lila karibe chintan chintite chintite bhavir haive sadhana.
By this sadhana, by this practice of remembering again and again the pratak lila of Krishna, one will attain bhav. Because this is the Dvitiya Yama Sadhana, and the Dvitiya Yama is Pratak Leela from 6 a.m. to 8:36 in the morning. And this Nam Namakari Bahuda Nija Sarva Shaktis. The secret of this prayer in Shikshastakam is to bring us to the revelation of Pratak Leela. And the way we get the revelation of Pratak Leela, the way we can enter Pratak Leela and remember Pratak Leela and serve in Pratak Leela, and come to the level of bhav by meditating only on this pratak lila. We as an ajata rati sadhaka, one who has not developed bhav, by this practice we can become a jata rati sadhaka. We can, bhav will awaken, as is telling here. And what is that? What is that practice? It's contained in the second shloka of the Shikshastakam, Nam Namakari Bahuda Nijasara Shaktis. The practice is to chant the holy name in association of sadhus. That's called Bhajana Kriya and Sadhu Sangha. And by doing that, by chanting the holy name in association with advanced devotees, very quickly we'll get free from anarthas, anartha nivritti, and become steady. And when we become steady, then we'll, by the mercy of Nam Bhajan, we can quickly rise to the level of bhava. Because he speaks this in his discussion of Bhajana Kriya. Then the next verse is about the Pratak Leela, and it's the end of the chapter. So this concludes This is this verse 44 describes the symptoms of an Aikantika Bhakta who is only chanting Hare Krishna. So this, any questions on any of this? It's pretty much, I'm just dictating it all. Prabhupada would say silence means agreement. For example, if the husband says, "All right, this weekend we're going to go to this place," and the wife is quiet, she doesn't say anything. I mean, she has to go. She's in agreement. But if she says, "Oh, wait a minute, I don't want to go there. This, that, we went there last week," then she expresses her disagreement by speaking. But if she's quiet, then he assumes, well, I mean, she's either afraid of me, or she's in agreement. So Prabhupada says silence means agreement. So Prabhupada would speak some lecture. So, any questions? Anyone? Any arguments? Everyone's like, you know, either out of fear or they didn't know, understand what he's saying. Well, I mean, I think you can say the first two lifetimes, the first two periods would refer to both the first two, Sambandha Gyan and Abhideya. Because someone has some, not, in other words, the person who's a Namaparadi for one lifetime, for example, he has some Sambandha Gyan, and not complete, obviously, or he wouldn't be an Aparadi. And at the same time, he's practicing the limbs of devotion, so there's some, he's entered into Abhideya, obviously, because Abhideya means the practice. And there's a touch of Prayojan, because he has his sight on the goal, but he's stumbling and falling due to his anarthas and aparats. So practically, I don't know if you could really, it's so black and white like that. Yeah, we just mentioned that. You could say it like that, I guess, if you want to. But it's not such a clear cut. You know, it's not like, okay, the first lifetime there's no Abhideya and there's no Prayojan. It doesn't sit with me. I can't quite. It's like that because, you know, the third stage, you reach the ultimate necessity. You reach the final goal, which is the Prayojan, and you attain Shudanam, which brings you to Prem. So that's the goal. Any other thing? So much present in our
why is this so?
Why is this so? And why is the sky blue? Because this is the nature of the Bhada Jiva. Krishna is telling in the Bhagavad Gita, Icha Dvesha Smutena Dvanda Mohina Bharata. Dvanda means duality. Icha Dvesha Smutena. He said all the living entities are born into this material world due to the impulse of desire and hatred or envy. So basically, the root source of these different manifestations, Pratishtha, etc., is desire. So the desire, you could practically say that desire takes different shapes. So one of those desires is desire for recognition, which we technically call pratishta or pratishtasha. Pratishtata means the quality of being overwhelmed by the desire for recognition. So it is one form of desire, right? So desire is the nature of the jiva. The Bhada Jiva has desire. So in the material world, in the material world, all the desire is perverted by contact with the material energy. Icha means desire. This is the verse from Bhagavad Gita. Icha dvesha smutena dvanda mohena bhartam. Dvanda moha. He's overwhelmed, he's bewildered by this duality. So this is the nature of the jiva is desire, but in contact with material energy, it takes a perverted form. We desire pratishta. So in the spiritual world, we desire the pratishta of Krishna. Right? The jiva also has desire in the spiritual world. in the spiritual world, he desires to establish the Nitya Mukta, or the liberated jiva. He desires to establish the glories and name and fame of Krishna. Yashomati Nandana Brajavaranagara. Yashomati. Yasha means fame. So she who makes Krishna famous, or she who is famous as Krishna's mother, either way. Or Kirtida. Kirti means fame. One who gives fame to Radharani. So the desire is, you can say, it's eternally existing with the Atma desire. So pratishtha is a bad thing here, but it's a good thing there. Like here, we have desire for pratishtha, my pratishtha. I want to be recognized, I want to be honored, I want to be glorified. But there we have desire for pratishtha, for Krishna. Krishna should be honored, Krishna should be glorified. So that, and then that's the, here it's, pratishtha is perverted, there it's pure. So you say, why is pratishtha so much part of our blood? Because that's the way God made us. it's part of Krishna's blood. Krishna loves to hear the glorification of himself, and he loves to hear the glorification of his devotees. If he hears someone chanting Radhe Radhe, he runs there. Oh, they're glorifying my Radharani. And he himself loves to glorify his devotees. He's always chanting Radharani's name. He's in Dwarka and he's chanting Radhe Radhe. He's sleeping and chanting Radhe Radhe Radhe. Or as we tell that story, he's chanting Arjuna, Arjuna, Arjuna. Depends on the relationship of that Atma, that Bhakta with the Lord. Krishna will be chanting. So, pratishtha, because what happened, the desire for pratishtha means that I'm the center, that we forget Krishna. We stop glorifying, he's Uttama Shloka, he should be glorified with so many wonderful verses. We're thinking, I should be glorified, I am this, I am so great. That means we're competing with Krishna. Well, this is not good. Yes.
Yeah, I was just reminded me that when he's talking about the source of the when he's talking about the elements, the Braj Prem and Braj Bhajan.
Oh, Chaitanya Shikshamrita.
The last one is Keshi.
Oh.
Keshi represents Guru and Vaishnava. So the last name. So he just reminded me of that.
Yeah, Keshi demon, he was the last demon to come to Vrindavan and meet his, well, sometimes he met his end and sometimes he was tied up in Sankalpa. But he represents, he's wild, he's kicking his feet up here and there, his tail is raised high in the sky, he's making a big noise. So it's like, you know, this represents the big guru. His tail is way up in the air. His nose is way up in the air. He makes a big noise. Winning. I'm so great. So he because this is like the last snare of Maya. To be God, guru or God. Guru is like, guru is God. He enjoys. They say, Acharya Mam Vijaniyam. Guru, Acharya is me, but some Acharyas, some gurus take the idea that, yes, they don't take the idea that I'm representing God. They assume the mood that I am God. So this is certainly a block for Braj Bhajan or Braj Bhakti, because in Braj there's only one God. In the material world there are many gods, many devas and so many gods and everything, and they have some power and they have some position, and everyone competes to be a deva or a god in the material world. But in the spiritual world there's only one God. And in Braja Gokul, there's only one God and one Supreme, and that's Krishna. And even all the lords of the material world, they come here every afternoon and bow their heads at his feet. But outside of Braj, they'll never do that. Outside of Braj, everybody in the universe comes to their place and bows their head at their feet. At the feet of Chandra, Indra, Surya, Shiva, Brahm. Everyone comes to bow their head and beg for something. These same lords and gods of the universe, they come every afternoon in grand procession and greet Krishna when he's returning from cowherding. And they fall on the footpath and drop all their helmets at his feet and start waving chamaras and chanting stutis and stavas. And Krishna passively sits there leaning on his cowherd stick or leaning on Subal's shoulder, twirling his lotus flower looking, okay, very good. Fat, hurry up. Chant your prayers and go. And the coward boys, they start joking. Say, who was that guy? Who was that guy with the four heads? He looked really weird. You know, he's got his head on backwards. And who was that other guy who's all covered with ashes? He never takes a bath and everything, and he's looking so strange. Who are these people, Krishna? Why do you have such weird friends, you know? So, no, they're nobody. Don't worry about them. They run around the universe and, you know, they do stuff. And once they came and did a big puja, and they did all these elaborate chamaras and fans all decorated with celestial jewels, and the coward boys, they were telling their parents about it, and the parents were all, get out of here, your children are always making up so many stories, because children are always telling stories and fairy tales. And they said, no, and they started showing them the chamaras, and the chamaras had like 8-foot long handles on them. You know, the handles are like 8 feet long and covered with the most unusual and brilliant diamonds. They said, here, we picked this up, they dropped this, and they were so stunned from the ecstasy of worshipping and seeing Krishna, they dropped these chamaras and fans and these huge these pots, water pots, they left them right on the fields of Vrindavan. And then the parents would see them, and Nanda Baba and his children, and they said, oh, this is something extraordinary. Then they started to think, oh, maybe these boys, you know, they're always stealing butter and yogurt. I think now they started stealing people's, you know, family heirlooms. Now they're going into the neighbor's houses and stealing their ancient chamaras and their antiques, and they're bringing them home. So they started pulling their ear and chest out, you naughty boys, now you're stealing other people's golden pots. And their parents couldn't believe that the demigods, the universal controllers, that they themselves are bowing down to every day, bowing down and worshipping Surya. They couldn't believe that Surya is coming down every day to touch their son's feet, you know, for all kinds of puja. They said, come on, what are you talking about? Any more questions? So this is Bhajana Kriya. Now, this last there's some Narta Niprati. It's always, I think we touched on this a little bit, but this is the this is represented. I don't think I discussed this with you, because we divide our notes into the different sections of this verse. Namamakari Bahada Nija Sarva Shakti describes Bhajana Kriya and Narta Niprati. And Sarasanga. First we describe Sarasanga, now we just finished Bhajana Kriya, and then Anartha Nivritti. We arrange it in this order. So Anartha Nivritti means removing obstacles or unwanted things. So we have a slight discussion. This is the format as we did before. A review for most of us. A review of Anarthas, what definition, and some of these things, which we touched a little bit. And then there's four verses Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes anarthas, more than what we already discussed before. These are, because I wanted to cover all the different verses, but these verses apply at this point in discussion. Text 16, 21, 22, and 43. We may have covered some of these. 22. I don't think so. 21, 22. Okay. So I'll just read this. Anartha. It's unartha. There's artha and then it's anartha. So art, like we have dharma, art, kama, moksha. Artha, A-R-T-H-A. The meaning of this Sanskrit word is that this is what it means. It means meaning. Unless artha means, the art means the meaning of something, the import, the significance. It also means money, wealth, purpose, comfort, happiness, insight into reality, desire, wish, aim, cause, motive, reason, advantage, use, utility. And art is personified as the son of Dharma and Buddhi. So religion and intelligence. apparently they have a son named Art. So Art is the son of religion and intelligence. And the word, and the prefix an, an means against. So anything which is against our purpose, or against our wealth, or against our comfort, or against our happiness, or against our desire, or against our aim, or against our advantage is an anartha. Right? So we have so many anarthas. So many obstacles, so many problems. So nivritti, of course, means removing or getting free from these things. So in general, we say anartha means unwanted desires in the heart which block or impede one's advancement in bhakti. Another additional definition. Anartha means that which has no use. In other words, it may be useful in maya. All of our anarthas may be useful and helpful to keep us in maya and make us so-called happy and comfortable in maya. But to be happy and comfortable in Krishna's service or in Krishna consciousness, then we have to remove these anarthas. And that's the process of bhajana kriya. Anartha, that which has no use. For devotees, the only useful, desirable object is Krishna and his loving seva. So, because one of the meanings of artha is useful. What is useful? What is useful? What is purposeful? So for us, the only desirable object is Krishna and his service. Anartha nivritti, the meaning of this term is clearing the unwanted desires from the heart. This will occur by the influence of bhajana kriya and sadhusanga. In other words, the more we do bhajana kriya, and especially in association with sadhus, the more complete and the more quickly we attain anartha nivritti. We become free from the unwanted desires in the heart. By always staying in association with advanced devotees, Krishna becomes very pleased, and he personally takes away anarthas. Because human beings are social animals, or social beings, I suppose we should say, and they always like to associate and be with others. It's our nature. We're not like wolves. Wolves and certain animals, they're loners. They stay by themselves. They wander. I mean, they come together in mating season, briefly. But for the most part, they're always wandering in the forest here and there, hunting and sleeping and whatever they do. They don't move so much together. Or tigers. Tigers are also very much, they move alone. But humans are always collected in groups and villages and institutions and societies, and this is our nature. So it's our nature to have association, to be in the association of some association. So there's basically two types of association. We can be in association of devotees or non-devotees. So the more we're in association of non-devotees, the more we develop non-devotional qualities. And the more we're in the association of devotees, especially advanced devotees, the more we advance in Krishna bhakti. So that's why it's told we should, as much as possible, always associate with devotees. Because we're going to associate, we have two choices, either associate with devotees or non-devotees. Of course, associating with devotees is also a blessing from previous Sukriti. But certainly we should choose that association over any other. And the point that's being made, or has been made by Acharyas, that when one makes the effort to associate with devotees, because it requires some effort sometimes, because we may be living at home somewhat removed from devotees and in surrounded by non-devotees, and the temple may be far away, or this group of devotees may be far away, and we think, oh, it's too far. It's not that far, but we're too lazy to go that far. It may be 1 hour drive, or 2 hours, And what's the difficulty? We don't have to ride in a bullock cart. We don't have to ride over the Chatikar road. In the west, the roads are like velvet, and the cars are like space vehicles. They're like Deva Vimans or something. All kinds of luxurious seats and stereos and you know, this and that. And driving is practically effortless. It's all automatic gas and steering and everything automatic. You probably just sit there and fall asleep because there's nothing to do. There's nothing to do but sit in a car, and the car does everything. Automatic cruise control and this and that, isn't it? Speed control and all these kind of things. I mean, the last time I drove a car was 20 years ago. But it was like that then, so it must be more now. You just get in and put in some computer chip and go to sleep, and the car takes you where you want. So there's not really much to do to go 2 or 3 hours to the on the highway down to some temple. But because we're so unfortunate that our minds tell us, no, it's not good, or what's why do it, or this and that. And we talk ourselves out of sadhusanga and stay with grandma and the television and our mother and father and brother and all kinds of mayic surroundings, which is unfortunate. It's misfortune. Because the acharyas are telling that when one stays in the association of devotees, what happens? Krishna becomes very pleased. Krishna likes it. And this is the meaning of bhakti, to act in such a way to give Krishna pleasure and with a favorable heart and mind. Oh, I want to stay here. I don't want to drive 3 hours to the temple and 3 hours back. It's too much trouble. I don't want to do that. Oh, but Krishna would like it very much if I would be in the association of devotees. I could go there and spend 2 nights or stay overnight. This will make Krishna very happy. Oh, let me try. Let me try to make Krishna happy. This is the constant meditation of a devotee. You look at Radharani, look at the gopis. What are they thinking from moment to moment? How to make Krishna happy? Oh, Krishna will be happy with this, and Krishna will be happy with that. Oh, I look so beautiful. The gopis and mandris address me so beautifully. And you're holding a mirror before me. At this moment, every single hair on my head is perfectly in place. The wind hasn't blown any hair out of place. And the eye makeup and the dots and everything is perfect. And I look like the picture of perfection, the picture of beauty. Immediately, within 1 second, please take me directly to Nandagaon so that Krishna can see me in this perfect state of super excellent beauty. So and then she's thinking every moment, let Krishna enjoy this beauty now. Everything is perfect, fresh and new, and the tilak is just drying. And let his eyes be the first to feast on the beauty of my body. And then from moment to moment, I can please Krishna in my beautiful form. Now I can please Krishna by cooking. Now I can please Krishna by serving. Now I can please Krishna by watching him from the kitchen and trying to capture his attention by thinking of him. And I think so much, and I'm going to think, and I'm going to draw his heart to his eyes. I'm going to draw his eyes to my eyes. And when his eyes come to my eyes, I'm going to communicate with him in such a sweet way that he'll be thrilled and happy within his heart. So she's just thinking like this. At every moment, how to enhance and increase Krishna's pleasure. So Krishna's very happy with such thinking. But we're always trying to calculate how to go away from Krishna. Because I'm Krishna. I'm actually Krishna. I'm the enjoyer. What makes me comfortable? What makes me, driving is so much traffic, this, that, blah, blah, blah. Because I know sometimes I have students in Bombay, I said, so you're going to Chopadi Beach? Radhanath Swami's there now. Oh, Maharaj, it's 1 hour away. 1 hour away, man. You've waited 10,000 lifetimes to have the association of such a devotee. You can't drive 1 hour? Oh, the traffic, blah, 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 the parking, blah, blah, blah. I said, but if I tell you there's some lady lying in an apartment 1 hour away, and she's just the most beautiful lady in the world, and she's just waiting for you, how fast will you go there? You'll go there by rocket ship, you know, you'll crash right through the roof of the building. Oh, here I am. You know. Our priorities are sometimes not properly in focus. It's very nice. By always staying in association with advanced devotees, Krishna becomes very pleased and personally takes away our anarthas. But we're actually, many of us, we're afraid of advanced devotees. We're actually afraid, because when we get with advanced devotees, we start getting nervous. They may ask me a question. They may ask me, can you tell me the Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, verse 13? Blah, 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 blah. I don't know. Well, when I go with advanced devotees, they make me nervous. They ask me, do you know Shikshastakam? And I've been initiated for 6 years. I never learned the Shikshastakam because I live outside. Then I met this, and he said, you can chant. And I was like, whoop, whoop, whoop. And then I went with some devotees, and I studied the night, and they said, oh, they call me, Bhakta, whatever, or Krishnadas, can you tell us the 10 offenses of the holy name? And you know, I never stayed in a temple, so I don't every day speak it, so, and I never think about it, I just chant and make a lot of offenses, so. So then they asked me to recite the offenses. I couldn't even remember them. I can remember one or two. I felt so embarrassed. I don't want to go there. So we become fearful to be in an advanced association, because devotees have lots of ESP and telepathic powers also, depending on how advanced they are. So we'll come in front of them and they'll say, so, are you following the principles? And you've taken initiation, you promised to follow, and you're living alone, you're single. So you should be following all the principles pretty tightly. But somehow this advanced devotee, he understands that the person's not. So then he says, Krishnadas, are you following the principles? And Krishna goes, and he starts getting nervous. He says, oh, how does he know? How does he know I'm not following? You know, and he starts to feel, and then because in association with advanced devotees, everything comes out. Everything comes out. That's why it says, anarthas go out. Because Krishna becomes very pleased. So Krishna is personally doing the operation. Krishna is personally doing the surgery. So when you come in the association of Krishna's devotees, then Krishna's making arrangements to take out the thorns from the heart. So taking out a thorn requires a thorn. And you have to cut, and you have to poke and pinch. And some blood even comes out to take out the thorn, and it hurts and it's painful. But then ultimately it becomes relieved and healthy. So many devotees are afraid to go in association with advanced devotees. I've had the experience myself sometimes. I go to see some advanced sannyasis, and I know, and I'm afraid, because if I've been in a little bit in Maya, I know they're going to know. They're going to find out. It's almost like judgment day. It's almost like going before Yamaraj. They go with some advanced devotees that they know. Like once, there was two devotees, a husband and wife, and they were supposed to take initiation from Puri Maharaj. And I was there, I heard this story from Puri Maharaj myself. Bhakti Pramod Puri Maharaj. And they had come to Puri from, I don't know where, somewhere, maybe Bengal or somewhere. And they were still like addicted to drinking coffee and tea, but they had the idea that they would give it up, you know, when they took initiation or whatever. They knew that they should not take that coffee and tea. So they came to the Dham, and they were there for a couple of days, and there was their initiation time for their initiation. And so Bhakti Pramod Puri Maharaj, he was only in bed, and he was only being served by some of his caretakers, nurses, male nurses. And so while he was doing bhajan, he saw that these two people were near the Singhadwara gate, and they were taking tea. So they came for darshan about one night before their initiation. And I was in the room, and then I couldn't understand him. And then afterwards he told. So he turned to them and said, so tomorrow is your initiation? And they said, by your mercy, Guru, you know, by your mercy, Guru Maharaj, you have said we could take initiation tomorrow, and this would be very our good fortune, and a very humble, nice behavior. So then he said, but you're drinking tea today? And like, he was asking like a question, but he was actually, you know, but you're drinking tea today? And they put their heads down. And he said, yes, Guru Maharaj, we were drinking tea. And then he said, yes. And then he said, by Singhadwara? And he said like this. No one came in and gave him any report. And they said, they were like, yes, Guru Maharaj. It's like, wait a minute, you know. So he said, will you promise you won't do this after tomorrow? You'll stop this? And they said, yes, Guru Maharaj. From right now, they said, from right now, Guru Maharaj, never, ever we're going to. He said, all right, tomorrow you get initiated. So they left, and I said, "What was that about exactly? What happened?" He said, "I was doing Nam this morning, and I saw these people came. All of a sudden, it was very strange for me. They just came in my mind. I saw them drinking tea in the tea shop." So Krishna, the devotees, they know many things. So they're our greatest well-wishers because they aren't envious of us and they don't want to hurt us and they don't want to destroy us. They want to push us up. They want to help us. They want to help us. They want to heal us. They want to deliver us and they want to love us. And they want to receive our love and offer our love to Radha and Krishna. So therefore, the devotees of the Lord are the ever well-wishers of the aspiring sadhakas. So we should always strive to associate with advanced devotees, no matter how difficult it may be, or how much hardship we may perform to attain such association. We should do it because it will please Krishna, and ultimately it's for our shreyas, our ultimate good, because we will become attached to Krishna and free from anarthas. So tomorrow we'll describe four types of anarthas, which we briefly mentioned. This is a kind of a summary. And then we'll some verses. Bhajan Rahasyam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki jai, Pancha Kalpa Trivyascha Kripa Sindhu Deva.